Hi, this is Ilka Cassidy with Passive House Accelerator, and thanks for tuning in to the special bonus episode of the Passive House podcast recorded at Building Energy Boston 2024. And a big thank you to New Energy Works, High Performance Enclosure, Timber Framing, and Wood-Based Building Materials for their support of the series. Thanks for taking the time to talk to me. Welcome to the Passive House Accelerator podcast. And yeah, I just sat in on your great session, and the session was called Building as Teacher, Education, Resilience, and Sustainability from the Inside Out. And since the conference theme is climate resilience, I'm really trying to find to look at these presentations and find out from different perspectives how you see how your approach or what you are doing supports or addresses climate resilience. So, but let's start with introducing you.
Hi, I'm Marvin Loazzo. I'm the Dean of Academics and Chief Academic Officer at Franklin Cummings Stack in Boston.
And I'm Gail Sullivan, and I'm the founder and managing principal of Studio G Architects.
Awesome. And can you explain really quickly what your presentation was about?
Our presentation was to really highlight some of the architectural design and decisions that we made to ensure sustainability in our new state-of-the-art facility. We are moving our entire campus from one location into another location, and it was very important for us to ensure that we built a building that was going to be energy efficient. And so it took a lot of hard work and a lot of time from Gail's work as the architect, as the lead architect, and you know, many different people who are involved in this project to get to where we are today. And so this presentation really was to highlight all of the activities that it took to get us to where we are today. Do you want to add anything?
Yeah, I think this project is really at the nexus of a lot of the things that today's conference is about, I think. Climate resilience, which we'll talk about, but also social equity. And I think in general, kind of a transformation of the way we approach designing buildings and the buildings themselves. So that's why we thought it was a good topic for the conference.
Yeah, I guess from your perspective, what role does education play to address climate resilience, and what decisions did you make early on to support this?
So for us, we knew that we wanted to get into the energy efficiency, sustainability space, because we knew that that was something that was important to the city of Boston and the state of Massachusetts and the federal government. And so we wanted to be a part of that, because as a minority serving institution and a Hispanic serving institution, we wanted to make sure that the jobs that are coming in this industry are going to be, we're going to have skilled workers from a diverse background be able to get access to that. In addition to that, our move to Roxbury is going to educate a lot of people in that community. Roxbury neighborhood is a really a Black community in Boston, and we want to make sure that we educate the people in this community about energy efficiency and understanding what does it mean, and making sure that they're not left behind.
And then education writ large. Marvin's an educator. I'm an architect. But the building itself, because it's in the heart of Boston's Black community, is, and because it's a public use, the building itself can be an educator for people. For many people in this neighborhood, this will be one of the few really new, highly sustainable buildings that they are welcomed into. And that's something that's been on our minds a lot as we've worked on this project, right? There might be other great buildings around, say, at Northeastern or something, but they're not available to citizens to just walk into. This one will be that open. right? Prospective students walk in the door, fill out an application. It's a very different kind of college. So I think education in what Marvin called the community-versity, right? Like that connection of college with community, I think is at the heart of this project.
And you made many decisions, I could tell, that basically support the students and in their learning. And I would like to know a little bit more what they're actually learning at FC Tech, but also early on the decision making in putting the team together for this project. You had some thoughts about that too.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things that we did at the beginning was we launched our new Center for Energy Efficiency in the Trades, where it made us take a step back and say, okay, what is needed? What do we need? And we realized that all the programs that we offer at Franklin Covey's Tech have some component of energy efficiency. So all the way from automotive, all the way down to our optician program, right? So we have in addition to that, we added some concentrations, where, you know, that focused really on, electric vehicle technology and building energy management and renewable energy and, you know, all these different areas that are, big part of the industry right now. And it's everybody's talking about it. But the part is that now that everything is becoming electric, now that everything is becoming automatic, you need electric grids. We need more electric grids. So we need electrical engineers that focus on power engineering. We need electricians to increase the electric power in the households. And that's why it's so important for us to be able to train those students in those areas that we're going to see a need for, right? And so that's really where we're coming into place. I think one of the things that we really want to work on is, you know, we need to educate the community, right? We need to make sure that it's important for the community to equip their houses with the energy efficiency and get the tax breaks and get all the things that the city of Boston is doing to support a climate controlled environment. And so I think that was really the reason why we really wanted to be a part of that. It was very important for us to maintain and keep our commitment to diversity. And we wanted to make sure that we heard what we've learned from the community and making sure that, you know, it's minority-based organizations or woman-based organization that is helping us build this project. That's why we chose a woman-owned architectural firm, a black-owned construction firm. We were very thoughtful in hearing what the community in the Roxbury neighborhood was telling us, and we didn't want to we wanted to make sure that we continue to celebrate diversity as a minority serving institution, and we wanted to make sure that we give every opportunity to a community that's really not looked at, right? And so they're not usually the first ones that is selected. And I think that, you know, having us highlight that is critically important. We need people to understand that this is a big project. You're moving an entire college into a new footprint and into a new community. For us, we wanted to make sure that we had the right people in place, but we also wanted to make sure that we showed that we have an appreciation for diversity. And that's how we became to select the space.
Great. Yeah, and it really showed, like your presentation, it really showed how thoughtful your whole process was. And I was very impressed by, of course, all the things that you just said, but also how the building reacts with the neighborhood and the community. Right. So you're teaching, you're setting up this whole program for the students to learn these trades for, you know, future demand. You're showing how to do it with the building that you're building, but also you're showing it to the neighborhood. And I feel like that was one of the important design criteria where you open up basically the facade and show off, this is what we're doing, so that the community has a chance to take part and learn as well.
Right.
So, Gail, from the design perspective, it sounds like it was challenging, but very rewarding.
Well, that part was easy because we always knew that the corner of Harrison and Eustace was going to be glass. And every design option we did from the very preliminary design always had this very glassy quality because we were always mindful of this notion. And I should step back, actually. So the current building they're in, red brick building, it's the first floor is about 5 feet off of the sidewalk. You can't see into anything. And I had walked by that building hundreds, if not thousands of times, and never had a clue what was going on inside.
And that's a different location.
Different yes. location. So for all of us, that notion that this college was a hidden gem, and people weren't seeing it. It wasn't visible enough in the city. That was really at the heart, both for people from the college and for us from the design team. So we were always mindful of that. And then when we got this site, which I have to tell you, we heard that it was available. We saw it the next day, and I believe the offer was made by the next morning. Yes. That's how certain everybody was that this was Franklin Cummings' next home. It was just unanimous in a large group and very quick. And so then, you know, you refine it, of course, but the whole notion always was this idea of inviting students in, the prospective students, the current students, but also their parents, their younger siblings, the community at large. And I'm sure that over time what's going to happen is there'll be open houses or there'll be whatever that's really inviting people mm-hmm. to come in and appreciate the building. So for us always, the college itself, but also the building, had to be a point of pride for the community. And I think we were very mindful in that design and that whole notion, you know, obviously. This is audio, not visual, but we walk into a lobby, see an open stair, and that stair takes you all the way to the roof. And in the process, connects you to all of the connecting spaces. And that was a very powerful idea for the design, because it was the notion that you could come in and get a feel as you walk up that stair of what's going on in this college. And that I really hope, certainly, that the students from opticianry, who might not think that they have a whole lot in common with the students in automotive, that they're going to be bumping into each other. They're going to be sitting next to each other in that lounge, and they're going to get to know each other. So it's the layers of building community that we were after. I think it's what the college is about, and it's certainly what the design was about for us. And I want to mention it because to me it's such a it's such a thing about who this college is that they say, well, we have this food pantry program. Well, okay, right now the food pantry is in this, unless it's moved since I last saw it, in the social worker's office, which used to be a closet.
Yes.
This is like so typical of education, right? People make do with what they have. They're really good at it. And we said, let's really think about what a food pantry in a college needs to be, because we don't want students embarrassed that they need food. Right, they might be food insecure, but you want them to be treated the same way as everybody else. And so making this bright, inviting kitchen, and there's just food there available for students to take, was a solution that was just, it's one little tiny bit of this building, but it was a solution that was really at the kernel of the whole philosophical approach of the college, which is to make every student feel welcome, to bring them all into the fold, to support them in every way they can. And so for me, if the staff were doing that, then I needed to make sure the building did that as well, that it really just wrapped its arms around every student and said, this is your place, you're welcome here. So that's the hope.
Amazing. That sounds really, really good. And I really like the idea of mixing the students up, because so many times in colleges, you have these like wings and everyone is separated and you can't think about like community that way, but you also can't think about professions that way. I mean, you have to
burst the bubbles, exactly, right? Within construction, but even in a broader view, because otherwise we just keep hitting boundaries, right? So we have kind of, we have to cross, how do you say?
Right, cross-pollinate, right? It's the bees, we cross-pollinate. I mean, that's why we showed that slide with so many team members, because there's no project that just one architect does, right? It's the architects, it's multiple engineers, it's other consultants, it's the funders. In this case, you know, Leggett McCall, Marty Jones, there were many people who were pivotal to realizing a project.
Yeah, and part of the team and part of the presentation were also amazing engineers that really figured out the systems for this building, which we don't really have time to get into right now, but they're a great, you know, team member as well, as I could tell. So from the architectural or construction side, so you didn't just think about design, you also really thought about how to build this. Yes. So, and you had some challenges, you know, with changing code requirements.
Yes.
Can you talk about that for a moment?
Well, I'll talk first about an early decision we made that's very important. So the college has done a lot of fundraising and has more money now than it did when we started, which is great. But the fact is, we always knew we were going to be on a very, very tight budget. And so we made a decision to make a simple box of a building. And I think that was a really important decision, that the money would get spent on the things that people could see, but not on the shape of the building. Right? So that was important. The college currently occupies just under 120,000 square feet. There's a lot of wasted space in circulation. So we knew we could reduce the size from that, but we kept having to reduce, because this was part of the cost effectiveness. And to me, sustainability has to go beyond just the technical engineering aspects, or even, you know, my work, the building envelope. It has to really be these big decisions, right? What's the site? And what can you do to improve that site as you develop it? And then what's the bottom line, the fundamental decision to make about your design to make them cost effective so that you can afford to do things like a lovely canopy at the corner with a sitting bench underneath that's going to welcome students in, right? We have an approach of, we call it the one big move approach, right? Which is you can't afford to do everything to the max. So you have to choose where you're going to spend your money and where not. And I think that is an important element of sustainability, as is building a building that's only as big as you need and not wasting a lot of space, which you then have to heat and cool and ventilate and maintain. So really making it very efficient.
Mm-hmm. And then the other question I had was about the changing code requirements.
So we did have, originally we had hoped to get into construction a year earlier than we are. And as I tell people in my office, it's always money that drives the schedule. And this project is no exception. If there's not enough money, there's no construction start. So that meant that we knew that we were going to cross the new code without having a permit. And we had explored for a little bit the possibility of going ahead and getting it permitted before the code changed, but we didn't, happily, because we really had designed a very efficient envelope and all electric systems, because that was the goal of the college to start with. We really didn't have to do any redesign at all. They upsized the rooftop units a little bit. We did have to do a lot of analysis and a lot of documentation to prove that we meet the energy efficiency measures under the new code, because the new code requires a much higher level of documentation.
And that's the Massachusetts stretch code.
And yes, the 2023 Massachusetts Energy Code. So I think it's great, because the documentation means we can't just promise things without being able to show that we can really deliver them. I think it's a great thing. And we've, in general, I'll say my firm approaches the code as a great starting point. It is not the end point. So it is our floor, and we usually try to do better than that. But it also gives us some great guardrails. And this, I think, is one of those examples. So the more that we have to document, okay, this wall section is really going to be as efficient as we say it's going to be, the more that Marvin and the college can rely on what we estimate their cost to be going forward, because they have to operate this building when we're all done, right? So it gives more predictability to a client.
Yeah, so how did you see the change in code? Because that's a big deal in Massachusetts, right? Is that something that you welcomed?
Yes, it was very important for us. And I think, one of the things that one of the things that's really important for us is that because we're using our own building as a training footprint for our students, it was so important that we're meeting all the requirements that it needs so that the students see exactly, yeah, this is why codes are important. This is why we have to do this, because now you're seeing the result of it. You can't train any student better than that, because they get to see it firsthand. Now, and the way that we've also made the design is that we're making it so that the students can, with the rooftop, they get to see it. So it's exposed. It's not all covered up behind the walls or anything like that. That was purposeful, And so all these codes that we had to follow, we is going to be critically important for when our students are learning the codes in their classes. But it's also going to be, they're going to see the result of that and why that's working and why, how all of that plays out in the building, seeing it firsthand. I don't know if that makes any sense.
Well, and how it materializes, right?
Yes, like, exactly.
Because we say all electric building, people don't necessarily have a picture in their heads of what does that mean? Exactly. What does that equipment look like?
Right?
What is the ventilation look like for a building of this size, right? And students will be able to see all of that. It's all visible to them. So we're excited about that.
Yeah, it's a very, very inspiring project. And I think it was said at the presentation, it's not just a case study, it's a pilot project, and hopefully a lot of other schools or institutions are going to follow your lead there. So thank you for being a trailblazer, I guess, in that way. So great. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Well, I did want to answer your question on climate resilience, because I realized I didn't. So we have pretty much built to the property lines on this building, but that doesn't mean that we don't have to meet the climate resilience goals of the city of Boston. We do, and we are capturing 1.5 inches on site, despite the fact that there's not much ground that isn't built on. So we have very substantial underground storage tank for rainwater. Unfortunately, we weren't able to use it for irrigation, but we are doing that, and then it will enter the city's stormwater system. So, and then I think the rest of what we've done in terms of climate resilience is really the longer term, right? Like the fact that it's an all-electric building, that we're reducing carbon, et cetera, has a positive impact. But in that immediate, what do we do for, in particular, water resilience? We do have a very substantial system underground.
Great. Well, and you're raising the next generation of students with awareness.
Right.
Technical workers in a green economy.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah. And raising them with aspirations.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Elka. That was fun.